May the words of my mouth and the meditations of each and every heart be acceptable unto you, O God, our Creator and Redeemer. Amen. Luke told me the other day, on the way home from school, when I asked what they were doing right now, he told me with great disdain that they were doing poems. I said, oh, great, poetry is amazing. He, however, did not agree. I lovingly responded with, well, you're clearly reading the wrong poems then. I got a fairly dramatic eye roll, along with a disgusted, I hate poetry, and most of it doesn't even rhyme, so what's the sense in that? His suffering brought to mind this gem. I hate poetry. Poetry is for wimps. It's all about doilies and butterfly wings, or stuff so personal only the writer could possibly know what it's about, which really makes me crazy, and half the time it doesn't even rhyme anyway. But ultimately, I shook my head as the realization of how much I am failing as a parent once again sunk in. You see, when I was growing up, my house was full of poetry and jazz. My mother read poetry, my father listened to jazz. The result was, well, me, I guess. Don't think about that. An odd kid who liked poetry and jazz in a time when blue eyeshadow, big hair, and Cyndi Lauper were the fads of the day. Nevertheless, when my kids were little, I relished in offering them pieces of heaven from the likes of Shel Silverstein, tucking them into bed for stories while I whispered, if you are a dreamer, come in. If you are a dreamer, a wisher, a liar, a hoper, a prayer, a magic bean buyer, if you are a pretender, come sit by my fire, for we have some flax golden tails to spin. Come in, come in. But I have to admit that the likes of Burns, Blake, and Dickinson that regularly visited my own childhood have been sadly absent from our home these last, well, forever. Poetry, it seems, requires time and stillness, not to mention effort, not unlike faith, I suppose. Who has time these days to wade through the metaphor and hidden meaning that both poetry and faith demand? The world just moves far too quickly for that. And yet, here we all are. People who have chosen to take this hour out of our day to give our faith the time it needs, to feed our souls with the word of life, to stand still and bask in the light of our Epiphany star for one more week. Ultimately, both poetry and faith are rooted in the same thing, I think, love. And it is out of love that our words of Deuteronomy spring this morning. For a rather heavy biblical text, this ancient book offers up some of the most timeless and poetic words our faith has to offer. Beautiful things, like love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and with all your strength. Bet y'all thought Jesus came up with that one. Turns out he stole it from the 6th chapter of Deuteronomy. Maybe steal is the wrong word. Maybe he was so deeply moved by this faith poem of his ancestors that it helped shape his own understanding of God's love and the gift of life eternal he longed for us all to know. And there it is. Life. That thing Deuteronomy calls us to choose over death. Like the person standing at divergent roads in the wood, it would seem that we must make a choice on which way to go here. Do we choose life or death? Blessings or curses? Do we obey or disobey? I'll leave it up to you to decide which path is less traveled by. And I can't help but wonder if in the end, does the choosing really make all the difference? We can, of course, easily get caught up in the rules of Deuteronomy, the commandments, decrees, and ordinances that are placed before us by Moses on behalf of God are nearly endless. So we must decide. Do we buy into the follow these rules or else kind of faith that has been the norm for many of our churches these past, I don't know, 2,000 years? Or do we slow down a little and allow ourselves to look past the apparent black and whiteness of these words to something less binary and more poetic? Our reading today is taken from the end of a lengthy speech offered by Moses on the plains of Moab. The people of Israel, who have wandered rather aimlessly for the last 40 years, are finally getting ready to cross the Jordan into the Promised Land. They are right on the edge of it, can see it, can almost taste the milk and honey it has to offer. But first, a speech, one that goes on for 30 chapters, must be endured. And y'all think 10 minutes on a Sunday morning is too much. Essentially, it is here that Moses lays out the covenant that God is proposing. You can go and read all 30 chapters if you like, or simply turn to the 6 verses we have before us today, as they basically sum up the whole thing. You have a choice here, folks. Choose life, or don't. But we do have to be careful in how we read these lines. Cameron Howard posted on Working Preacher's website, "Reading these 6 verses in isolation might give the impression that this is a one-time choice for the Israelites, but we have the good fortune of knowing how the story continues. To choose life in this moment does not mean to have to accomplish anything or have to have finished anything. Choosing life means starting something, living in a messy, difficult, and holy relationship with God. Moses is not asking the people simply to check off the correct box here. Moses is asking them to turn their whole lives towards God. He's asking them to love God with all their hearts, souls, and might. The thing I can't help thinking about here, though, is that I know, like from firsthand experience, that love, real love, true love, well, it takes work. I've been married 15 whole years, I know that. Who's been married longer than that? Couple. Love takes energy, time, and attention, 3 things we don't always have in abundance. As Glennon Doyle posted on Friday, which was Valentine's Day for anyone keeping track, real love is tough as nails. Real love is overwhelmed and exhausted and just done at the end of each day. Real love is knowing that tears of exhaustion are not signs that you're on the wrong track. Tears of exhaustion are confirmation that you are pouring out every bit of your heart, soul, body, mind, and energy into service to your people. So if love, real love, is like this, hard, and resulting in tears of exhaustion now and then, divine love can't be all roses and heart-shaped boxes of chocolate either. Love isn't black and white, how could it be? We make far too many mistakes for that. Real love, divine love, is about life. Real life. Doing things that bring life to the world around us and to our own hearts, minds, and spirits. The Jewish Midrash of this text from Deuteronomy explains that if our interpretation of the law of God leads to death and curses, we are interpreting it wrong. God's law always leads to life and love. Always, without exception. The trick, of course, is that loving God is as hard as it is to love anything else. Frederick Buchner wrote in his book, Secrets in the Dark, "Nobody ever claimed that the journey was going to be an easy one. It is not easy to love God with all your heart, soul, and mind when much of the time you have all but forgotten God's name. But to love God is not a goal we have to struggle toward on our own, because what at its heart the gospel is all about is that God moves us towards love even when we believe God has forsaken us. The final secret, I think, is this, that the words, 'You shall love the Lord your God, become in the end less command than a promise. The promise is, of course, the love of God will always move in healing, loving, and life-giving ways. If it doesn't, then it's not God's love. God's love will always draw us back, always wrap us up, always offer us grace unending, always turn us in the end towards life, even when we're hell-bent on turning the other way. I think it's hilarious that in the very next chapter, God is already telling Moses, okay, look, this covenant we just made a chapter ago, it's going to be broken, like, right away. And I'm not going to be happy about it. But don't worry. It'll work out. I'm not going anywhere. Now, isn't that a life-giving poem? One we should all learn by heart. I'm not going anywhere. It is my hope that one day Luke will come to love poetry, or at the very least stop rolling his eyes every time it comes up. Time will tell. But more than that, I pray that he and me and all of you will allow the poetic beauty of God's truth to move in us in such a way that we choose life and love, whether it rhymes or not. Amen.